tuned in to Faith and Reason on Holy Family Radio, where we connect culture and ideas to the daily lives of Catholics. I'm Dr. John Pinero, Associate Professor of History and Director of Catholic Studies at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids. And today I'm speaking with Michael Tober and Mark Postma, both of Catechetical Foundations. We're going to be talking about the new evangelization, what they call the new catechesis, and everything in relation to that, and most likely the importance of culture to what it means to be Catholic in the 21st century. Welcome aboard, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Pinero.
Well, we've met before, and Mark Postma is an alum of Aquinas College. Mm-hmm. He's the director of Catechetical Foundations and also has a Master of Arts in Theology and Christian Ministry from Franciscan University of Steubenville, right?
That's right.
And Michael Tober is Assistant Director of Catechetical Foundations and directs the campus ministry at Muskegon Catholic Central Schools. And you also have a bachelor's in theology from Franciscan University of Steubenville.
Proud alum.
So, you got it.
So we have a couple Franciscan alumni here, and both of you are certified at the master's level in catechesis.
That's right.
So, what does that mean? What exactly is that?
Well, in our diocese, the Diocese of Grand Rapids, there's certain goals that you have to hit as a catechist. So certain amount of training. It was four different categories. Now it's three categories. Now it's spirituality, theology, or professional theology, and methodology. And if you accumulate a certain amount of hours in there, you can, in a sense, prove the worth of your work, that you are a catechist who has taken the time to get trained, and then you are provided with various levels of certification. So Mike and I have both done, both in our theological studies and in our catechetical studies, work that has gained us the master level catechist.
So then to be a catechist, you have to have attained one of these levels? How does this work exactly? Is every diocese different?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
To some degree, it is. But as far as I know, every diocese has some sort of standard. Like a teacher in a high school has to get a certification to teach. They might have a degree, but then they have to go the step further to get certifications maybe in certain subjects. In the Catholic Church and in this diocese, you have to have certain benchmarks you reach that are verifiable that state that you're certified to pass on the faith. And there's mm-hmm. different levels. There's different levels at the parish, and then there's different levels for the school systems. For administrators, teachers, et cetera.
I see. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. Now, I was happy to participate in the launch of your Authenticum series in October of 2013. And so maybe before we get to talking about catechetical foundations and your training of catechists, why don't we talk about the Authenticum series? Maybe you could tell me a little bit about it. Michael, why don't you start us off here?
Sure.
And tell us a little bit about that, the goals of it, its overall purpose, what you aim to do.
Well, Authenticum was an idea that was born with a desire to reclaim our culture for God, for the church, a Catholic culture. It actually, in reading Catechese Tridende, John Paul II, in paragraph 19, he talks about this problem that people in the church have received a systematic catechesis, but their heart was never moved. And because of that, they went into a culture that was very depraved of the things that are good. And so the faith that they received wasn't able to grow in a real, true, organic environment. And so people end up losing the faith. And in that paragraph, he says the heart needs to be reawakened again.
Would this have been a matter of learning dogma and nothing
not
beyond that,
or
memorizing Ten Commandments and stopping there? What does he mean?
You know, I think I can answer that and say that it's not just about knowing the facts. It's not just about knowing the dogmas, but I think what we've seen in the West here is a real illiteracy when we talk about the church, and especially the language of the church. And so what Authenticum aims to do within Catechetical Foundations, and even as a standalone, is to reawaken the mind and the heart to everything that is good, true, and beautiful, especially in the life of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's been lost, you know, in our homes, even in our parishes, for surely as a culture.
Yeah, without a doubt. And so the idea was, how do we begin encountering people again and make them aware of the importance of the gospel and of the person of Christ. It's very difficult in today's culture, and I know from someone who trudges in the school systems, and you do too, at a different level, that the heart quite often isn't very open to, hey, let's dig in the catechism, or we're going to cover this particular doctrine today. Quite often the heart has to be reopened to something that's truly beautiful and good. And when that happens...
And the heart can recognize that too.
They can. And so Authenticum was a movement by us to create an avenue where maybe we take a different approach to the culture around us and start bringing people in and awaken that desire again to meet Christ, but more importantly, see the church in the midst of culture and give it the positive face it needs in the world today. And hopefully that brings about conversion, and hopefully that brings about people wanting to dig in again and formally learn their faith and learn that language and live their faith.
I think that one of the keys you said there, Mike, was the desire. It awakens that desire. You know, John, when you finished your speaking event there in October, I asked a few people about you know, what they thought of it, and they said it was a little over my head, you know, but it was really great. You know, they didn't really understand the history because they don't have much of a history background. The recitation of the poem by Mr. Steve Ayers was just fabulous.
And for our listeners who weren't there, what we did was near as close as we could get to the Feast of the Holy Rosary, mm-hmm. which had been established by Pope St. Pius V. We I talked about the history of the Battle of Lepanto, and that was followed by Mr. Steve Ayers reading G.K. Chesterton's poem, Lepanto. And so if you can imagine 100 people turning out to hear a history lecture and a poetry reading, and maybe I counted something like 30-40% of the people were under 30. Would be in the youth category. Mm-hmm. And I had parents email me afterwards with their teenagers who were there. Yeah. And you know, they don't go to poetry readings a lot. And so if you're touching the heart in the way that only poetry can touch it, I think that's a great thing.
And I think what happens afterwards is just as important. Is the purpose of Authenticum isn't to do the lecture and then send people out the door. The purpose is to do the lecture and keep the doors open until the last person leaves without any pressure, so that people can engage each other and talk about the church, to talk about things that are truly meaningful. That's just not happening. And that needs to happen again. It needs to happen. People need to find their home in the church again and have the freedom to talk about, well, things like Lepanto and G.K. Chesterton and Hilaire Belloc and Plato and dance and music and sacred art. And those things have to be brought back and shown the beauty that they are and the avenue they are to God and to truth.
What's the argument that would take the approach of, let's say, beauty over intellect? So you talk about reawakening the heart, and intellect works for some people. And I know some Catholics, including me, I would struggle with over-intellectualizing my faith. But I recognize that. And, you know, John Henry Newman had written on that, and people have talked about how to deal with that. But that's, you know, that's one of my issues. But I would recall von Balthasar, whom I'm not that familiar with, but you as a theology major is probably more familiar than I. But that must play a key role in what you're talking about. If we're created to know the good and the true and the beautiful, then you're exposing people to beauty then, and they're going to be drawn in by it, and that's when they start to make the connections.
I think that's the great thing about the church is it is intellectual. It's reasonable. It's also supernatural, and it's beautiful. Where some people might be more, you know, and we're kind of doing a black versus white type of thing, they might be more into the intellectual bandwagon. There's other people that are, you know, more heart. You know, they're more, I don't want to say feeling or more emotional, but they're the Mother Teresa.
Yeah, there's a variable difference between the passions and emotion and what you mean by heart.
Right, and I like to think, you know, there's the, let's just say the Pope Benedict, and then the Mother Teresa's, you know, both holy, both extremely intelligent, but very different. You know, you might say if you had to make that distinction, Benedict is the intellectual, Mother Teresa is the heart. You know, if you had to make that distinction, that's the beauty of the church. That's the beauty of the culture that comes about from the church, is that it's all together. So the heart will get reawakened. And yeah, you might not become a scholar, but you can fully live the sacramental liturgical life of the church.
Everybody wonders.
Everybody.
And when wonder is lost, regardless of level, then I think you just forget about it. Everyone from the youngest child to the greatest intellect, if they lose the sense of wonder, then where's the life? We need to wonder again. We need to wonder about God. We need to wonder about the meaning of our culture. We need to be awestruck by the
birds flying through the air.
We do. And we need, even for myself, when I listened to your lecture, and I could see the battle.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved that. And I wasn't familiar with all of the history. But when the Poles in the second siege of Vienna came marching in,
I could see that.
I could see that. And you know, for everybody in that room, that's it. That awakens. That's the awakening. They begin to wonder again, and they begin to wonder about the awesome power of God, who is redeeming us through this stuff. It's awesome. Yeah. You know?
What's keeping us from wonder today? Is it the culture? Is it television too early, and we lose the sense of what we call it, an attention span, so that we can't reflect on a tree or an acorn, or sit and watch the clouds and guess what shape they are, and these kinds of things.
It doesn't pay the bills.
That's a loaded question.
Yeah, we only have 55 minutes.
We do only have 55 minutes.
I want you to solve all of humanity's problems within the next 5 minutes.
Dietrich von Hildebrand in The Trojan Horse of the City of God actually discusses precisely that. You know, what's the root cause? And he looks at a number of different things, and I think it's a number of different variables. He addresses technology and what he considers to be advancements or progressions for man, and he questions: Is this man really progressing? And are these truly, really good for us? Those are questions to be pondered. There's certainly no doubt that we need to detach ourselves again and come in contact with the stars. Man needs to look up again. He needs to look heavenward. And I think a lot of the things around us keep us focused only right here. And when you're not looking up, then you forget to wonder.
And it's easier. You know? It's easier to use technology. It's easier to make use of material things. It's easy to forget the enduring standards. Okay, I think Russell Kirk talks about this in his book, Redeeming the Time. What was normative and what's the enduring standard? Hmm. It's not that it's difficult, but it's not going to happen right now. And we become so detached from God, so detached from the sacraments as a life source, as a reason for what we do, that it's boring. It's become boring. And so it's the next thing, where these days it's the next iPhone or Candy Crush has been popular now. Everybody has to play Candy Crush when they get 5 minutes instead of just kick back and, you know, if you're so inclined, go outside and smoke a cigar with a friend.
Okay, so for your host, but for nobody who's listening, what is Candy Crush?
I've never played it. It's a game on all the iPads
and
phones.
One of those kind of things.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's the new tech tricks.
They're laughing in the sound room. So
yeah, so, you know, to bring this full circle, Authenticum wanted to look at the humanities, the things that have always traditionally caused man to go beyond himself, in my words, look up.
One of my great thrills in teaching at Aquinas is that we have a humanities program, a two-semester sequence, and I get to teach it once in a while, not as often as I like, but I'm doing it again for the first time in several years, and we're right in the middle of the Aeneid. We've finished Homer's Odyssey, and we're looking forward to doing the Dante's Divine Comedy. in the end, my students are always, I won't say happy that we do the almost the entire Divine Comedy and they only do one of the books and other classes, but you can't just give somebody hell. You got to give them purgatory and heaven, right?
Yeah, you do.
Give them the Divine Comedy.
Yeah, right.
But what I tell them as an American historian is that, you know, humans have been asking the same questions forever, and there's certain complexities to them in different eras. And, you know, we need to build on the wisdom of the past. And the Catholic Church, she preserved a lot of that collected wisdom, right? The wizard, you mentioned Plato earlier. Plato, yeah, obviously, yeah. not a Christian, right?
Correct, yeah.
Pretty darn good pagan, though.
And that's right? Exactly right. And C.S. Lewis had some great things to say. And so did G.K. Chesterton the difference between the pagans and modern man and some of the commonalities and differences. Right. And looking at people when people are really grasping and groping for truth, they're really looking for it.
Yeah, and that
pagan,
groping isn't just outside the church; it's inside the church, just as much. Just because we're Catholic doesn't mean that we're susceptible to this sort of imminent movement, you know, and this imminent way of being. And so it's important. It's important to reintroduce that and go after people and ask them to, start thinking and experiencing the transcendent things of life.
So we have to have, you'd say, constant catechesis, right? This never can stop. It's like constant conversion.
Because the image of the church is pretty poor. It's pretty poor. You know, the church is still asking those questions and proposing those questions. Modern man is not. And so the image is poor. And, thus the revitalization of culture has to happen. And it's got to happen at those initial places that causes man to stop and ponder. So that the door is open. And the church has always been there.
Yeah, and ponder the dogmas. John, you mentioned Cardinal Newman. You know, he had two principles, dogma and holiness, in that order.
I love Newman.
You can't be holy without the dogma. You know, even Saint Bernadette with Lourdes, she was not educated, but her holiness would not be there unless it was for the church, clearly defining and perpetuating via the Holy Spirit the grace of God.
Yeah.
You know,
the
Paschal mystery, the sacred mystery, as Saint Paul would say.
Well, what other kind of things are part of the Authenticum series? And then we'll move on to talk about catechetical foundations and maybe a broader view of this concept.
Sure.
So they've talked about a battle in a poem, but what else is there?
Well, you know, there's been lectures on Advent. We like to try to be a little preemptive on what we're talking about. So we don't want to talk about Advent in Advent, where you say, well, that was great. Maybe I'll do that next year.
That'd be great for next year. Thanks a lot.
And then we forget about it, right?
Right.
Which is very easy to do. Mm-hmm. So we had Father Phillips from St. John Cantius in Chicago spoke on the saints of Advent, the lights of the season. Why are the saints here? Why are they in Advent? We had an Advent book that was passed out as well for living Advent in the home, not Christmas, but Advent. Range of topics here. St. Athanasius and the Incarnation by Father Ferris. So we're hitting on a lot of different topics. We have history. We get into the liturgical life of the church, and we go to
patristics.
Patristics. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pagan philosophers, eventually. Music. Yeah. Sacred music. Liturgy. And that's culture.
Yeah, it sounds like the things we focus on in the Catholic Studies program at Aquinas.
Yeah.
Culture.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully what we'd like to see as one of the fruits of Authenticum is for people, participants, to come and perhaps feel called to be a catechist in their parish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so oftentimes we have catechists in our parish which are good, faithful Catholics. But they don't know how to really hand on the faith outside of a textbook or the latest CD that came out, which was a great talk perhaps, but it's not part of, you know, we talk about this sometimes in a school setting, a Catholic school or even a parish or Aquinas. Is it the air that's breathed there? Is it culture? Is it a liturgical air? And that's missing.
Well, so then, let's move on to catechetical foundations. Did you two meet at Franciscan University? What's the genesis of this catechetical foundation?
Theology on Tap, years ago.
Yep. Okay.
That's in Grand Haven.
Yeah. Having a few beers and
talking Jesus.
Yeah. Really, truly. And that's about as far as our relationship went. And 4 years ago, I was at St. Mary's Parish in Spring Lake, and the Sunday Mass. Mark and I have known each other, but we didn't really spend a lot of time together. And he approached me after Mass and said, "Hey, I'm putting together this stuff. What do you think? Would you look this over? I just produced this. It's this course I want to do in the parish." And I said, "Sure." And it was fantastic. It was incredible. And it was some material to help train catechists. And it struck a chord with me. So we met, and then we met again, then we met again. And those conversations and those meetings developed into catechetical foundations and the desire to start an apostolate to meet a true need in the church, which is the formation of catechists and helping people in the trench become better equipped to pass on the sacred deposit of faith. And we're still meeting today.
I think this is the kind of thing I think that Vatican II intended. This is Edmund Burke's little platoon, pick your, whatever you want to describe it as, the part of the creative minority. This is it. I mean, this is that new flowering of the faith, particularly among lay people. This is the type of lay involvement I think the council intended, not so much me being involved necessarily within inside the liturgy, but this kind of involvement, right?
Yeah.
You're called. You're charging yourself, taking on the duty of passing on the faith in its fullness to the next generation.
Yeah.
I know I was catechized in the 1970s during the felt era.
Oh,
we had a lot
of
there was felt, and somebody would put felt on it, and I don't want to blame my teachers. I'll blame my own attention span. But I remember entering a college class and learning about the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist for the first time from an Episcopalian professor, and I said, "We believe that? Really?" It was like I'd never heard it before, and I was 18 or 19 years old. Now maybe I had heard it, but I didn't hear it enough to sink in. Or there was something there in the way,
and it's not necessarily gone. I recently was in contact with somebody who is actually using some of our material, going through one of our courses, who converted to Catholicism about 15 years ago, and she didn't know how to use the catechism. It's never even opened it, and I said, "When you converted, did they show you a catechism?" "Never." So I said, "I'm sorry." Because
what else can you say? And you are.
Yeah, and but I really meant that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm very sorry. And therein lies part of the heart of the crisis that exists. The church can't just simply exist to say, "Hey, Jesus is God," and everyone show up. Because it's sort of an affront to who we are and how we're made, and we are created to know, and to know deeply. And just because things are difficult doesn't mean we shouldn't invest our time. You know, I'm going to throw myself on the limb at times. My wife is a little difficult, but I love her, and because I love her, and I've come to know her, I want to know her more. And every time that happens, we've been married for 10 years, just when I think I've got it down, she surprises me. You know, and that's to me, that's the heart of catechesis. That's the heart of the cultural movement of it, is that it's this person. These dogmas are related to him and everything that he has revealed for us. And we have to recapture that. And
the more you understand, and this is, of course, through faith,
set you free.
The more there is to love.
Amen.
And the more freedom and the more liberation there is.
Mm-hmm.
So realizing it's not just an intellectual journey, but it's a faithful journey of the mind and the heart. We can wrestle and we can struggle and we can study and we better pray. Mm-hmm. And we will know our Lord more and more and fall more and more in love with him. But that only comes through, ordinarily, it only comes through study in prayer.
Yeah, it does.
Always prayer, but ordinarily it does. Study is necessary.
What year did, how long have you been doing this, Catechetical Foundation?
Maybe 4 or 5 years now.
So 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Give or take.
So what kind of classes are there? So let's say I come to you, I say I want this for my professional development as a catechist. I need a certain number of points for the diocese, this kind of thing. What would you suggest?
First I say don't just do it for the points. do it for yourself and your audience. Mm-hmm. You owe it to them. And we have a wide variety of classes. We currently have 3 online courses that are up, ready to go, have been used. One's just a 4-hour class. Four hours, if you do it in a group setting, perhaps a DRE or a youth minister wants to take their catechist through it, you might spend a day doing it. But it's designed to be done on its own.
That's a great format.
Take around 4 hours, just an intro or a refresher, actually. It'd be a good yearly thing to do. And that's free to our members, actually, right now. We have Catechist Basics. We use Catechese Tridende as our main text, written in 1979 by John Paul II. And then we have Catechist Development right now. And that uses a guide for catechists, and that was a 1992 document by John Paul II as its text. Both of those are 3-week courses online. They're moderated by Mike and I, or Mike and me. And we have 2 more in the works, Catechist Essentials and Catechist Methods. Essentials will probably be using Acerbo Nimis by Pius X as its primary text. And Methods, we probably will not have a primary text, but we'll be kind of bringing it all home and wrapping up those other 3 courses and now putting it into a really strong method for your daily and weekly use. Mm-hmm. But, Mike, maybe you want to speak too. We'll also come out to the parishes.
We will. I mean, there's formats if a parish wants to have us come out and work with catechists right there in the trench, and we're versatile enough to find out what they need the most. Ultimately, everything we do with the catechist always starts with some of those basics. We're going to talk about some of the foundational principles of handing on the faith, things like Christocentricity, the aim of catechesis,
primacy of grace,
foundational truths, things like that that are like the tool belt to the science of handing on the faith. Mm-hmm. These are some things that always need to be present when you are catechizing a group of people, whether they're in second grade,
the RCIA,
even though it's going to be at their level, to high schoolers in a classroom, to maybe a youth group setting or RCIA. So,
or the school of death, the old folks, huh?
Or the school of death.
Yeah, they need to be catechized too.
Yeah.
We all do.
And then the website has numerous resources, free resources that someone, who knows, maybe they're in California or they're out at IHM and they want to hop on our website and say, wow, this is awesome. This is a free resource. I can use this for some of my own training. And then we also provide a whole host of resources for people that want to become a member of the website. And then they can use those and they can stay a member. And we just ask that they not copy them and
don't steal our work.
Yeah.
I will say this as well. Our online courses, we can teach on site as well. We do have them in printable format where we'll come to you. We can set up a couple days with the staff or something in the summer over several weekends.
And the diocese does recognize those courses, and I believe they offer 10 hours.
The
10
Diocese hours. Of Grand Rapids?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you been approved in Diocese of Kalamazoo?
Not yet.
No.
Okay. You know,
but if they're listening.
If you are listening, we want to come talk. But, the fruit of this work has been like a little cynical, a little upper room for the last few years of us just producing our work, praying and asking God, what do you want to do with us? We both felt that's the way. So we've never pushed it hard. It's only in the last year that we've started to see more people visiting our site. We've conducted a few classes online. The Authenticum lectures, I believe, will help tremendously because people will see the type of things that we're doing and they'll get to know us for who we are. And we'll build that type of confidence to see the apostolate grow. At least that's my hope. Yeah.
Now, Acerbo Nimis is not that familiar to me, but I'm surprised that so few Catholics have really heard of catechesi tridente. That is, when right. we had Professor Eduardo Echevarria come to Aquinas a couple of years ago. He taught a class since then, and he's coming again in March of 2014 as part of the Catholic Studies Speaker Series to talk on marriage that time. But when he came the last time, he spoke to the catechist of the diocese on that document. He said that it's, you know, it's a very unknown document, and sometimes catechetics have been put together without consulting it, which amazed me. But, you know, I'm not a catechist. I'm not a DRE. I didn't know this.
Well, you are a catechist.
You're in a Catholic college. Maybe that's our next topic.
Hour number two.
But let's tell me and our listeners about that document. Its importance. What's in there? I'm sure that's really a formative document by St. John Paul about catechesis.
Yeah, I'll start off by giving a little introduction to it, and I'll let Mike kind of take it away. Here's the interesting fact with Catechese Tridente. Its initials are CT, and that's how you'll see it abbreviated in other texts. Mm-hmm. If you read the Catechism of the Catholic Church and read those sections on catechesis and handing on the faith, and then you go into the general directory for catechesis, which is a compilation of many documents put to usable form for catechists. Mm-hmm. It's a universal document. Catechese Tridente is quoted excessively in both of those. And I mean excessively. You'll see CT everywhere in the footnotes. That right there, just through virtue of observation, there's something important about this document.
Mm-hmm. It's like the foundation to a house. And after the Second Vatican Council, there was a genuine renewal for the work of catechesis. You know, I think RCIA is one of the biggest spotlights, and the whole process that the church began to look at liturgically for seeing people come into the church. But this document, Catechese Tridente, is that framework after the council that says this isn't something. This is something that has more life. So it follows in the footsteps of Paul VI. Much of this work in Catechese Tridente is really Paul VI. Mm-hmm. And he had his great encyclical on evangelization in the modern world. Mm-hmm. And then there was this synod near the end of his papacy, and he dies. You know, John Paul I dies. And John Paul II picks up this work. And this is actually right off the bat. This is in 1979. It's just as profound today for the work of catechesis as it was when it came out. Why it's hidden, I don't know. I ask that myself sometimes. Why, at least on a superficial level, when you get into parishes or you get out there, the catechesis can be this little hot topic. But very rarely do you see Catechese Tridente at the heart driving much of these catechetical movements. And that's really sad because it's a profound document. And there's much wisdom in it for the person that wants to or is called to hand on the faith.
I think one of the reasons why you don't hear about it much, or Cervunimus, or the Guide for Catechists, or Evangelii Nuntiandi, as you mentioned by Paul VI, and several others, they're difficult today. You know, unless you are in school or in a class, a lot of Catholics today struggle with the language. There's some non-English words in there, if you can imagine that, right?
Right.
There's some Greek words in there, some Latin words, and even some German sometimes in these documents. Right. Yeah, the faith is bigger than America. You know? They are difficult, and I think that's why people don't pick them up. They're intimidated by them. Another reason is it's the foundation. It doesn't tell you necessarily how to set up your classroom and how to engage the students. Or classroom management.
Right.
People have this understanding, I think, this false understanding. I grew up Catholic. I can teach the faith. You know, I just need some tips on how to be crafty with the kids. These documents are essentially the foundation of handing on the faith. Without them, the house will crumble. But we don't look at foundations of houses and go, wow, that's beautiful.
Well, we don't have a culture to lean on. We're not surrounded by a Catholic culture that you can, if I'm not doing a good job at home, that maybe you kind of bounce back off
right.
that and
that's right.
you still grow in the faith. We're lacking that. That makes the job even more difficult.
Yeah, this document is not the long, cool woman in a black dress. It's just not. And, you know, she's probably a little more sexy than CT. and that's just the blunt truth. Unless you're willing to step back and see the whole picture.
How this will penetrate through what you're going to do.
Right.
And that's why they're foundational. You gotta put in the legwork before you can go make it happen. And these documents are the legwork. Mm-hmm. It's not going to tell you how to necessarily do it or how exactly to put together a lesson plan. It gives you the tools to do it.
Sure. Now, is the guide for catechists more nuts and bolts, more pedagogical, or is it very similar to CT?
The guide for catechists is, I think, it's really demanding, actually. It's very
demanding.
With
the word guide in there, it sounded more popular.
But it is demanding. You know, hey, we need catechists, right? And we need to hand on this faith. And it's not only the parents, it's primarily the parents, but it's also the role of the parish. And the other families and whatnot. We could talk about that another time. But essentially, what makes up a catechist? I would say this is a document for bishops, for priests, and then for directors of formation and youth ministers. Yeah. I would say more for the paid staff. How do you get catechists? How do you train catechists? And not only that, what's necessary to be a catechist? John Paul II in here says as much of, if you don't have the trained catechist, don't start catechizing.
You're doomed to fail.
Yeah, what's the point?
Those are his words.
If they're not equipped, yeah, don't bother. Better to go with less catechists who are trained than with a full staff of catechists who are poorly trained.
You're doing more damage to souls than good. Well, lead them astray? Look at the
state of the church.
Hmm. Or you just keep chasing your tail.
Case in point.
You know, it's just the quality's not there of the catechesis. And we all know how it is. We've either been in a parish or worked on a staff or been asked ourselves, I'm three catechists short. CCD starts next week. Can you help? You know, and who do they go to? Retired catechists, retired teachers, newlyweds in the parish who, oh, man, we can get them on fire. Can you be a catechist? You don't know anything about them. They've, you know, barely gotten through college.
Yeah.
You know, maybe went to Catholic.
Yeah.
You know,
and, so, you know, and some and, of that and stuff we, is what brought us to the bet. Idea of, like, a new catechesis.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and the hot topic is the new evangelization. Yeah. That is
and it's a good
the
topic.
Hot topic. It's a great topic. But it's
what happens once you're evangelized.
Yeah, the new evangelization is
right
real, and you know we're feeling it at Aquinas
right
with
now,
the high school Catholic kids who come to the college and those who are already there. And if there's the Catholic renewal at Aquinas has been driven really by a lot of students and a small number of faculty, and not the other way around.
And it is. Mm-hmm. It's this. But you have to step back and go. And this is what we did. What is evangelization, and what comprises that as a whole? Well, it's the initial proclamation of the faith. It's that initial movement towards a soul to bring them into that initial. Well, it's like John's gospel. Where are you staying tonight? Well, come and see. And it was 4:00 in the afternoon. That's so penetrating that John would reflect and remember that initial call. Come and see. That's the first part of evangelization. And for people that experience that, that's a profound moment in life, that 4:00 in the afternoon. But evangelization is more than just that. It's more. And the second half of evangelization, and we read it, especially in Catechese Tridende, is the systematic handing on of the faith. And Mark and I refer to that as the new catechesis. If the only movement in the new evangelization is done to just go out and get people to come back, and it stops at the 4:00 in the afternoon, it stops at that initial, hey, we gotcha, then it will fail. There won't really be a new evangelization unless, you know, I liken it to having two legs. You're going to run faster with two legs than you are on one. Well, you're not going to run with one. You're going to hop. And you're always going to hop.
And I think about, too, is our parish is equipped to suddenly take in 50 people or fired up, and I want more. I had my 4:00 in the afternoon. Where do I get more?
Where do I go?
RCIA starts again in 2 months.
Why?
We failed them.
Those are questions, you know, Mark and I ask all the time.
Yeah. What's the solution? I don't know right now.
Yeah.
But they're the questions.
Right.
Because if you have, like, the Catholics Come Home Network, you know, they did that great campaign. As far as I know, they're still working. I was talking to one of the people involved in this maybe 2 years ago, a year and a half ago now, and he said the biggest problem they have is the parishes aren't equipped to receive them. You know, they do these major ad campaigns, and then these people...
What do you do when they come in? And they're all at such different places. That's they left the church for different reasons, reasons that are probably not the why they're still out, right? Mm-hmm, why they're still not attending Mass and out of practicing and living their faith. And, you know, one size fits all. I don't think it's going to work to reawaken their heart.
And it just can't, because people are in different places. But yet there's this urgent call from the church to ensure that all of who Jesus is and revealed is given. And so I've had this conversation. You're not the only one I've had this conversation with. And they say, okay, that's great. I get you. I'm following you. But how does that happen? How does that happen? How does that? Well, it happens by finding the people who that moment has happened and just offering the opportunities a little bit at a time. And eventually it'll have its residual effect. But we can't snap our fingers and change everything. People like you and people like Mark and others out there need to be willing to give their heart for the gospel in those ways again, and do everything they can within their limits to respond. And like Pope Francis says, I know he's kind of a hot topic too, but he says, shake things up. Shake things up. But he's also said, open the doors. Open the doors. The doors of the church need to be open, not shut. Mm-hmm. And I mean that figuratively. But they need to be open to everybody wherever they're at. And that's going to demand that catechists, people in the trenches, are encouraged to get training and help in that process, because one guy can't do it and one priest can't do it.
Because it's very individual. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to Newman again, one of his other, the way he would go about catechizing and evangelizing is one-on-one. And it's, you're not trying to force them into something. We kind of hear this, we need to walk their journey with them. I don't know if you'd put it in those words, but I need to answer his questions. Mm. I need to respond to what he's asking, not just present some good information or present some dogmas. What are his questions? Mm-hmm. How can I address his? Which means we need more people, because that takes time. You know, you can't just come into a program and have 30 people in RCIA and expect everybody to understand what's going on or have their questions answered. We need a lot more catechists.
We do.
And we do need them quickly.
So we need a lot more catechists. We know that though it's better than it was 10 years ago, mm-hmm. we need more priests for the flock, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess you mentioned roles a few minutes ago about the role of the family and the mm-hmm. parents. And you got the catechists there, and then your teachers at Catholic schools, you work with, and then there's I'm at a Catholic college, and well, what about the bishop and the priest in his role and roles together? So where do they figure in with this then? Because you need a lot more catechists to get the job done. I mean, one priest can't get this job done when it comes to RCIA, for example. So my wife is a convert. She went through RCIA. I remember her classes. I attended them to relearn my faith. Mm-hmm. And it was a large suburban parish. We probably had at least 30 people in the class that year that started out in the inquiry section anyhow. But I remember we were several months in, and I said something innocent, like, when are we going to teach them the Hail Mary, for instance, or the Rosary? And the DRE said, Catholics, we don't really do that anymore. But if you want to teach you that, you could. If I wanted to teach you, Michael, how to clean clothes the old-fashioned way on a washboard. You know, I could take you down to the river, and it would be quaint and everything.
Right.
But nobody really does that anymore. And I thought that's odd, because I thought they did, and everywhere I go, there's people praying the rosary. And then I moved to Santa Maria, California, and there was just this rosary craze there. And there were thousands of people gathering on this one mountain in town to pray the rosary all the time, which made the farmer crazy who owned it. But that's a whole other story.
Nobody prays that anymore.
How do you approach that then? So, but particularly the clergy. So how do you see working with the clergy? What's their role in the type of catechesis we're talking about, where you're training lay people to educate folks about their faith. And everyone has a right to the faith in its fullness, right?
Everybody.
The documents are clear,
very clear
on that. I have a right to have the faith passed on to
me. Its full rigor
and vigor. Fullness. It's full richness and without beauty, and maybe it's going to be the intellectual stream that grabs me. Jesus is going to use whatever he wants to use. But I think of intellectuals like Thomas Merton, who was grabbed by the liturgy when he went in the back door of a church one day.
Yeah.
And he becomes this more known, I think, for being an intellectual, but it's beauty that grabbed him first.
Yeah. Let me respond to you by actually giving you a quote on the last thing you just said. In the Guide for Catechists, John Paul II says this: the catechist service is never an individual or isolated act, but is always deeply ecclesial. We need priests. We need bishops. We need to be led. We need to be led.
Yeah, that's
and we need the we need the sacraments, and we need them to be available. That's so deep, and there's no clean-cut answer, and priests are... they're overwhelmed. So it's hard to ask much more in a lot of ways. But what we have to do is realize who, as catechists and as we evangelize and catechize, how much we need the priests and how much we need to pray for them instead of nitpicking our priests and nitpicking what they do or don't do. There's a lot of that could be done. But what's the point? We need to pray for them. They're our fathers.
Yeah.
They're our spiritual fathers. The bishops are our shepherds. We need to trust our shepherds and pray for them and support them. And catechesis does that. It's telling our pastors, we're here to help. What can we do for you? How can we assist in the proclamation of the gospel and the evangelization? Because when we catechize, it's not just me giving you information. It's ecclesial. It's a work of the church, and it's an initiation into a deeper life of the church. It has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with you. It's about our Lord and the church, which is very personal and very individual, but as part of the body of Christ, the mystical body of Christ.
Yeah, Dr. Panero, on Holy Thursday, Pope Francis gave a homily. And he talked about the oil that's poured over the head of Aaron, and it rolls off his face and onto his beard and off his shoulders, and the oil drips down off the garment and out. And it was one of Pope Francis's first homilies that he gave, and it's deeply profound. I think it really answers your question that you're asking, what do we do? And Pope Francis encouraged bishops and priests. He said, this is symbolic of your own anointing, that this grace, that our ability to give grace and to bring that to the world, it must be done. It's time to roll up our sleeves again and go out with the power that's been given to you, and bring the sacraments to people. Bring the truth to people. I think it's an incredible homily. And in one sense, I also think he was saying, it's time for us to put our money where our mouth is. The church had this incredible council in a day and age that is corrupt. It's ideologically corrupted. It's morally corrupted. And here stands this council that even within the church at times gets fuddy with Catholics, but it called upon everybody, bishops, priests, laity, everybody to do that. And I really felt like he was saying it's time to put the money where the mouth is. The church has spoken. And so there has to be a renewal. You know, selfishly, I would say I want every bishop in the United States to call catechetical foundations and put us to work. That's what I want to selfishly do. But they have to, those bishops and priests, they have to research their heart as much as we do and say, is this vitally important again? Is it worth rolling up the sleeves and being like the oil of Aaron to go out into the world? And until that happens, well, there'll be places where the faith lags and where places where priests and bishops take that lead and do it, then there'll be less problems. There'll be less crisis in the church. So
one thing that would be nice to see is almost coming full circle back to our talk about Authenticum, is to see priests once again turn to the beauty of the sacramental life and the liturgical life within their own congregation and parishes. Mm. Processions,
yeah,
amongst the streets.
Devotions.
Corpus, yeah, devotions, Corpus Christi processions.
Vespers.
Bring out the bells and whistles. Yeah. Yeah, and this is, we don't have to rebuild anything here. It's all there for us.
Yeah.
The people will follow. Yeah. The people will follow. When the leader gets up and does something, it might be slow at first, but the people will follow.
Yeah, when you're trying to restore culture like that, I know, Mark, off the air, you and I have had this discussion before. You're trying to restore a culture that was almost gone or dying before you were born. So I was born in the era where we didn't have processions. And, I mean, well, they were. We didn't have them in my parish or anywhere in town. If we did, I didn't know about it. And yet they're this valuable, beautiful part of our Catholic heritage. And as a young man, I felt robbed of my own heritage. All these great things. Where did they go? These great things surrounding the Easter Vigil that all of a sudden they were gone. Where did they
minimized.
Go? Pardon?
It was minimized.
Yeah, minimized, gone entirely. And so I recall one day at a. It was an indoor procession at St. Isidore Catholic Church here in town, up on Diamond, and the Father Don Lomashevitz was processing through the church with the host and the monstrance under the canopy and the candles and the incense and going up and down the aisles, and I saw this little girl just looking up at it in awe, and I think. A non-Catholic may have been there as a little kid. They may have looked at the priest. He was dressed. It was amazing. And someone swinging incense, that's going to draw a kid's eye. She was looking at the host.
And they were.
And I thought, here was Catholic culture being built. Here it was being made in the eyes of this child who was going to grow up with this being.
Yes.
Look at the
norm and just feel it and soak it in the way a kid really, you know, you train, you teach your child to pray and they're praying and there's no doubt in their heart at all. You know, they haven't gotten to that age of 17 where they might start to wonder about this and that or the other
sophomores.
Thing. It's just, there it is. Oh, is it even younger than that? Okay, Mark. And so I remember thinking, so this can't be done.
Right.
I mean, it gave me a lot of hope for rebuilding Catholic culture. And we can't bring the 13th century into the 21st, but we can certainly have a Catholic culture or a minority culture that affects the greater culture and saves some.
And that's the beauty of the faith. It transcends centuries.
Yeah. And look at the orientation. You're talking about that procession, right?
Yeah.
Why did that little girl, why was she looking at Christ? Because everything in that procession was orientated toward Christ.
Yeah.
Right? The priest was holding up our Lord.
Christos
the canopy Christos. Was over the Lord.
Lord.
The incense was directed
swinging toward
the Lord.
Yeah. People were kneeling.
The child, with all their misconceptions and stubbornness, well, children are very stubborn, but you know what I mean.
We're children.
I don't know. My child is a saint. I don't know. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. You need to read St. Augustine more. But the orientation is there, right? You know, you can either look at, when a priest says Mass, ad orientem, the orientation is clear that the sacrifice is being offered through the priest who is in persona Christi. Still is valid with the priest, you know, quote unquote, facing the people, but it's very evident to the naked eye, to the uncatechized, to the illiterate, what's happening and what the role is of the people, the sanctuary, the priest, the altar. It's all orientated very clearly. It's very catechetical. You know, we catechize liturgically, which doesn't mean we tell them about the liturgy. It means we use the liturgy to catechize. You know, in our weekly sessions or whatever.
Yeah, and that's the heart of culture. I think the first place, family, John, the family. You know, families return to processions in the home with your little ones.
They're fun.
Process, light a candle and process, and sing a song. Because you know what? That's where the next bishop is. That's where the next priest is. That's the front line. You know, return to hanging an image of the Sacred Heart up with a little candle and flowers. We have to return to those things. Don't be afraid to pray the rosary for 15 minutes with your children, even if they're shaking all over and crying, and you do the best you can. God doesn't expect the rosary to be perfect with 2 and 3 year olds. He just expects, I think, families to remember him and to give him what to do to him. And then, and I think that's where it starts. And then it flows over into the community worship. You know, a number of years ago, I took part in a Maronite baptism. It was incredible. It was incredible. And
was that was it in Aramaic? Or was it in English?
It was in the language. And everybody turned to the West with their body, and they rejected Satan. I loved it. And then we all turned. The priest said, he said, it was in Muskegon, at St. Michael's. There was a young Maronite there, and so this priest came and did the baptism.
Yeah, Descartes was wrong. We can't separate. We got to pray with our bodies
we
and
do.
Our minds, our
we
hearts.
Do. And he said, which
and
way
the
east?
Created things.
Yeah. We all turned east, and we accepted Christ as a whole body of people facing east. And I thought, man, this is incredible. This is cool.
The whole person's engaged.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, the universal church where there's different rites. There's a lot of richness there too. Mm-hmm. And I imagine you all are more oriented towards the Roman rite in your catechesis because you're
I'm a Roman
this
Catholic.
Is who the people yeah, are, right? Yeah, and you're right. Roman Catholics. But is there any opportunity there? Have you gone to maybe?
I know in the Authenticum series. You know, there's certainly the church is taught that the church breathes with two lungs.
Yeah, we certainly have very active Ukrainian Catholic church
we do.
In town.
We do. I've actually brought students there. I brought students there to witness the Byzantine Rite.
And my humanities students, they attend what are called these cultural events, which I would consider the 1963 Missal in Latin over at Sacred Heart and the Ukrainian Rite.
St. John Cantius in Chicago. Okay. I've taken students there too, and it just. Yeah. I had a young man a number of years ago who had his hair cut like a mohawk and earrings, and and he played in a band, and it was just sort of, disgusting music. But he went to St. John Cantius, and he heard the Mass of Four Voices by William Byrd.
Wow.
And we went to pizza afterwards with all the students, and his words were, quote, Mr. Tober, the music was out of this world.
Because it is.
Because it was.
Because it was.
Yeah, we're looking up. To use your phrase, we're looking up.
Right. Yeah, because it was. So, yeah, it was. That was awesome. Yeah.
Well, you are listening to Faith and Reason with Dr. John Panero. I'm here with Michael Tober and Mark Postma, the directors of Catechetical Foundations. We've been talking about their lecture series, Authenticum, about catechesis, about some of the great magisterial documents of the church involved with catechesis, and how the new evangelization is the new catechesis, I would say, and all sorts of other things along the way. Our time's just about over. Wanted to thank you both for coming. And,
thank you.
Yeah, I wish you the best, and please let us know how things are going with the Catechetical Foundation.
Amen.
We'll do.
Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you.
You've been listening to Faith and Reason with your host, Dr. John Panero, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Dr. John Panero is Associate Professor of History and Director of Catholic Studies at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Faith and Reason is brought to you by Holy Family Radio. I'm your program producer, Michael Fiorenzo. Join us next time as we connect the riches of the Catholic intellectual tradition to daily life. Thanks for listening.